Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that here we are on the cusp of Valentine's Day, and I'm sure everyone is preparing, certainly have enough time because Valentine's Day, of course, is on Tuesday, so we have the weekend, we have a day before Valentine's Day to get ready. No excuse to forget anything. Thought I'd read a little essay written by Rich Roper from the Chicago Sun-Times. He entitles it, Sexism, Injustice, Pain. It's all in the Valentine monologues. Rich writes, who's responsible for Valentine's Day becoming a major commercial and romantic event, featuring cards and flowers and dinner reservations and the giving of the bling? Who's behind the dubious trend of some houses and businesses actually displaying elaborate Valentine's Day decorations in their windows and on their doors for weeks before the big day? Who's the driving force behind Valentine's Day as a marketing phenomenon, a huge date night for restaurants and theaters, an advertising gimmick, a near-official American holiday? Nope. We can't blame it on the greeting card companies or the chocolate manufacturers or the jewelers or even those mysterious people in Vermont who have devoted their lives to making cutesy theme teddy bears. Sure, the romantic product industries have a vested interest in Valentine's Day and they've aggressively contributed to its frightening growth, but it's not corporate America that should be held responsible for making V-Day a holiday. It's women. Without women, Valentine's Day would die a quick death. Without the input of women, February 14th would be just another cold day. A generalization? You betcha. But it's an accurate one. I wish we could test it right now. I wish we could ask the men of this country just one question. Should Valentine's Day exist? What do you think the results would be? How many men would actually vote to keep Valentine's Day on the calendar? The answer? Zero. Not even that guy in Will and Grace. Valentine's Day exists because women want it to exist. We can talk all we want about men and women being equal and wanting the same things, but the truth is that most women are thrilled about the existence of Valentine's Day, and most, if not all, men would rather catch a head cold than observe the rituals of Valentine's Day. Of course, you could take a stand. You could tell your honey that you don't believe in Valentine's Day and you're not going to be co-opted by a commercialized holiday. If you want to demonstrate your love, you don't need Hallmark to do your talking for you. You're a rebel, an individualist, a man's man. You're not going to send flowers or take her out to dinner or buy her treats just because the advertising agencies and the fluffy articles in the newspaper say you should. One might think a woman would appreciate a man who thinks for himself like that. And one would be wrong. The man who tells a woman he doesn't celebrate or believe in Valentine's Day is not rewarded or applauded. He is branded as a terminal cheapskate and a thoughtless oaf. Even if the woman in his life smiles sweetly and says, "That's all right, honey, I don't care about Valentine's Day," inside she is thinking, "You stupid jerk. How am I supposed to go to work and act happy when all the women around me are getting flowers and sappy phone calls? Just a stupid jerk." Now, the only way this Valentine's Day madness could be reined in would be if millions of women of all ages decided to put a stop to it. If women led the movement to simplify and scale back Valentine's Day to make it less of an event, well, they have that power. Men. Imagine if the woman in your life came to you this morning and said, "Honey, please don't plan anything special for Valentine's Day this year. In fact, I insist that we don't do anything. If you want to take me to dinner or send me flowers or tell me how much you love me, Do it when you sincerely want to do it, not when the calendar says you're supposed to do so. That's not love. That's cultural peer pressure. Until the woman lets the man off the hook for Valentine's Day, the man is on the hook for Valentine's Day. It's their holiday. We're just slaves to it. You got a little time, guys. Get something for Valentine's Day. You won't win this battle at all. So just a few thoughts from Rich Rover on Valentine's Day. You might want to buy her something warm because Punxsutawney Phil says, 6 more weeks of winter. Pennsylvania's Punxsutawney Phil emerged from his lair to see his shadow on Thursday in the process predicting 6 more weeks of winter. But at this rate, that's not so bad because our winter hasn't been that severe. The groundhog made his prediction on Gobbler's Knob, a tiny hill in the town for which he's named about 65 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. Temperatures were near freezing when he emerged at dawn, unseasonably warm, and were forecast to climb into the mid-40s in a winter that's brought little snow and only a few notably cold days. Thursday's ceremony is largely that. Phil's prediction is determined ahead of time by the Inner Circle, a group who dons top hats and tuxedos and decides in advance what the groundhog will predict. That's what they look forward to every year. I imagine the party afterwards. So we have 6 more weeks of winter, which isn't too bad if the winter is like this. I just wish we'd get some winter. Of course, for Valentine's Day, you can bring candies and chocolates and roses and everything you want. Different idea would buy some cupcakes. And, of course, the place to buy cupcakes is Swirls, because cupcakes make people happy. Now, Valentine's Day, give that special someone the gift of decadence. And certainly at Swirls, which is located at 705 West Belden, 3 special Valentine's cupcakes, the Chocolate Passion, the Chocolate Raspberry Hazelnut Crunch, and the Triple Chocolate Cupcake, chocolate cake with dark chocolate chunks baked in layer of chocolate ganache, chocolate buttercream dipped in chocolate, topped with white chocolate drizzle. Whew. All flavors are available in gluten-free, which is very popular nowadays, or at least I'm hearing at home. If you'd like to get some information, call Swirls at 773-404-2253. That's 773-404-2253. 705 West Belden, right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital in Lincoln Park. Ask for Pam Rose, terrific lady. Mention our name, and certainly she will make sure that you're all set for Valentine's Day. We have all these Valentine's Day symbols. Valentine's Day is associated with several symbols that reflect the meaning of love and romance. And here are some of the various symbols which we see every Valentine's Day and what they mean. Well, we see a heart, of course, that's all over the place. In ancient times, the heart was thought to be the source of all emotions. It later was associated most directly with the emotion of love. It's not clear when the heart shape became the symbol for the heart organ. Some scholars think the symbol came from people's early attempts to draw an organ they'd never seen. So that's the heart. Of course, we see boxes of chocolates and hearts, and all the kids make the hearts. Now, red roses, those are pretty traditional, and certainly all women like to receive red roses on Valentine's Day. These flowers were said to be the favorite of Venus, the Roman goddess of love. Now, Venus was the Roman goddess of love. Aphrodite was the Greek goddess of love. And with those various Valentines that we make, or we've seen the kids make, surrounded by lace. Now, this material long has been used to make women's handkerchiefs. Hundreds of years ago, if a woman dropped her handkerchief, a man might pick it up for her. If she hit her eye on a certain man, a woman might intentionally drop her handkerchief to encourage him. Thus began her association of love with romance. Love knots. These symbols of everlasting love are a series of winding and interlacing loops with no beginning and no end. They are made from ribbon or drawn on paper. Lovebirds, found in Africa. Lovebirds, colorful lovebirds, are so named because they sit closely together in pairs, like sweethearts do. Doves are symbols of loyalty and love because they mate for life and share in the care of their babies. Now, when you sign something, sometimes you sign something with an O or with an X. Well, the X sign represents a kiss. The tradition started with the medieval practice of allowing those who could not write, because not everybody was literate in those times, allowing those who could not write to sign documents with an X. The signer placed a kiss upon the X to show sincerity, which is how the kiss came to be synonymous with the letter X, and how the letter X came to be commonly used at the end of letters as kiss symbols. That's interesting. I didn't know that. And these O is supposed to be a hug, I think. Cupid. Well, Cupid was the mischievous son of Venus, the Roman goddess of love. Cupid is supposedly responsible for people falling in love. According to myths, anyone being hit by Cupid's arrow falls in love with the first person he or she sees. I remember my grandfather said one time, you know, if you're in love and you hear bells, get your ears checked. So it's something like getting hit by Cupid's arrow, I think. Well, we have a Valentine's Day share, some interesting things. And as we go on, I have a couple other little tidbits of information, especially the history of St. Valentine's Day, which is kind of interesting to read about. And we'll certainly go into that. But I thought I'd pick some special music for Valentine's Day. And I thought late night sax for lovers, kind of some sexy sax music for Valentine's Day might be a good choice. And this is a song from Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music. In fact, it's going to be playing, A Little Night Music is going to be playing at the Writers Theater up in Glencoe coming up in the spring here. It's certainly something to look forward to. Made famous, of course, by many artists. Judy Collins comes to mind, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett. Send in the Clowns. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Sax for Valentine's Day. Send in the Clowns, of course, Stephen Sondheim's terrific hit. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce that the explosive Broadway hit American Idiot, called wonderfully raucous and emotionally charged by the New York Times, will play for 2 weeks only through February 19th at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph. American Idiot, a 2010 Tony Award nominated Best Musical and 2010 Grammy Award winner for Best Musical Show Album, features the music of Green Day with the lyrics of its lead singer Billy Joe Armstrong. The book is by Armstrong and Michael Mayer, and the directions by Tony Award winning Michael Mayer, who did Spring Awakening. Nominated for 3 Tony Awards, American Idiot is the story of 3 boyhood friends, each searching for meaning in a post 9/11 world. Through incredible spectacle, thrilling performances, and with the hope embodied by a new generation, American Idiot has given Broadway audiences the time of their lives night after night since the musical began performances at the St. James Theater in March of 2010. The musical features the hits Boulevard of Broken Dreams, 21 Guns, Wake Me Up When September Ends, Holiday, and the blockbuster title track American Idiot from Green Day's 2004 Grammy Award-winning multi-platinum album. Also included in the score are several songs from Green Day's 2009 release 21st Century Breakdown and an unreleased love song, When It's Time. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning actor, having appeared on stage in the hit musicals Billy Elliot and Spring Awakening and in Dangerous Liaisons, performer in both film and on television in Being Erica, Degrassi, The Next Generation, and The Zach Files, a proud graduate of the National Theater School of Canada, now starring in the hit Broadway musical featuring the music of Green Day, American Idiot, through February 19th at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph, Mr. Jake Epstein. Jake, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations on the great success and reception that American Idiot has here in Chicago.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been really, we've performed two shows so far here, and they've been great.
And next couple weeks are going to be wild. I know this weekend is going to be very popular. Terrific story. Certainly, we're all familiar with the music of Green Day. Just for our audiences, just a little quick synopsis of what the story is all about.
Your setup described it pretty well. But yeah, it's about three slacker stoner friends living in suburbia USA who want to get out of suburbia and make something of their lives. So it's the musical follows their three journeys. One of them, Tunny, joins the army. Johnny gets sort of mixed up in this world of drugs, and Will, the character that I play, gets left behind in suburbia when he finds out his girlfriend is pregnant. So it's sort of these three very different stories with a lot of political undertones and really amazing music. It's like the closest thing, I think, to a rock concert that's ever been part of theater and put on a stage like this.
Well, people have said that. It's a good observation. And, of course, the show starts in Jingletown, USA, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Jingletown, USA is where the book says.
Which is suburbia. And it's really, if you look at it, it's a story of, to some extent, wasted youth, but also the end of innocence of three guys who grew up together, became friends, all took different paths, kind of end up back in the same spot at the end of the day. But they go through different emotions, certainly in different parts of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, Green Day's album American Idiot, I know, was written as a response to 9/11. It was released in 2004, and I think it was sort of trying to channel that period of time of after this tragedy that happened, of how to be American, how to feel, what to feel, and how to know what to believe in, and that kind of confusion and anger is sort of bottled up in this show, and that's sort of what it's the time that it's portraying.
Well, when you think of it, Jake, you know, it's hard enough for adults to figure out what response we should be giving in a situation like that. Now you look at how our kids are supposed to be feeling when they look up at adults and are looking at them for role models and say, well, what do we do now, guys? You know, where are we going to go here?
And I think
Johnny and Will kind of and Tunny kind of go through this. And you look at Green Day's music, and I think if you had to categorize it or define it, I suppose you could say it would be what? American punk rock or alternative. But really, there's a lot of songs of hope and longing
absolutely.
In Green Day's work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a positive undertone to everything and like an honesty to it that's the reason why I love the album so much.
Now, had you listened to Green Day, of course, when you were younger?
I did. My very first rock concert I ever was convinced my parents to go to when I was a kid was
really?
A Green Day concert. And, you know, first time experiencing the full rock concert with the smell of marijuana and, you know, and loud music and lights and everything. And it just blew my mind and made me want to, you know, play music and get up in front of people and perform. So 10 years later to be part of this show has been a real, been really lucky.
When you look back at that, can you hardly imagine this is what happened here and you're in the show?
No, not at all. It's ridiculous. Totally ridiculous.
But now you studied in the theater, of course. You studied in school and espoused to be in musical theater, so forth. And, of course, you've been in some great shows, Spring Awakening. I mean, if I was to look at another show which American Idiot could have come from, certainly Spring Awakening was one of them.
Michael Mayer was, of course, who's our director of American Idiot. also directed and helped create Spring Awakening. And yeah, I'm like a huge fan of, obviously, of his work to want to work with him so much. But yeah, he gets it. It's awesome. He knows how to tell a story in a totally unique, interesting way.
Now, when you were in school studying and so forth, of course, having the opportunity to be Spring Awakening, that's kind of amazing, remarkable in itself. Who did you look up to as far as musical theater performers or the type of theater you would like to perform? Was it dramatic? Was it musical? Was it?
You know what? It was never musical theater.
Really?
There's a huge list, but I'm from Toronto, mm-hmm. Canada, and went to the National Theatre School of Canada, and there's a huge list of Canadians that I looked up to, and a lot of them actually came and taught at my school, which was amazing. And I always loved music, like playing music was always kind of my love, and I was lucky enough to go to this school. And it's been interesting that since then, the sort of the major roles that I've been cast in have been these sort of rock musicals that have like infused, you know, people with training and actors who are not necessarily like, you know, Broadway trained musical theater performers, but sort of people that just love rock music.
Sure.
And sang in bands. And that's kind of what's been what was organic about Spring Awakening and what they love about this show is having people with that kind of organic, you know, rock, punk, whatever
sure,
thing.
Sure. You know I see an American Idiot here, and I see the similarity with Spring Awakening in that you see Spring Awakening, especially in Chicago here, Jake, it's come back a couple times, and there's certain timelessness about it. And I see the same thing with American Idiot. You're going to see American Idiot coming. I know you're doing some traveling with the show, but you're going to see that come back to Chicago a couple times, I think, because I think people, you know, the more they hear about it, you may miss it the first time, they're going to catch it the second time, or maybe see it the first time and want to see it again.
Hopefully. Well, exactly. Yeah. Hopefully they'll see it this time.
Sure.
and then maybe there'll be another time.
You know, I saw an interesting article in the paper, one of our town's reviewers, and how he defined some of the activity in American Idiot. He says, you get life choices. You find a girl, take drugs, and party all day, just like Johnny did, or you find a girl, get married, and hold the kid all day, which is like you, as Will did, or you find a cause, get a uniform, and sacrifice your body all day, which is what happened to Tunney. Interesting how he put that together, because that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, what I'm always so amazed about is how many different kinds of responses we've gotten from the show. Because there are, you know, a lot of like political undertones and there's a lot of depth to the show, and at the same time it's like this loud rock concert. It's truly like a piece of art. You could look at it from a whole bunch of different ways. And yeah.
Well, certainly there's a great response from the audience. It seems like you guys on the stage really get along very well. Do you do that off stage too? Are you guys pals?
No, we just, it's just,
that's all an act, huh?
No, this has truly been, I can honestly say the best cast I've ever worked with, in that everyone genuinely loves each other and hangs out in our hotel room after, and mm-hmm. we joke about the show, and, you know, we play music, and we drink, and, you know, enjoy being here, it's really... It's an amazing feeling to be on stage with people that you really respect like that.
Now, do you, of course, you have a show every night. Do you practice during the day? Do you still have to come and rehearse during the day?
We did this week. Mm-hmm. We had our associate director came in to tighten up the show, so we had
sure.
an all-day rehearsal yesterday, and then we did a show at night.
Well, where do you travel from Chicago?
I think it's Minneapolis.
Just getting a bus and go, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. There's been a stretch of one-week stops, and then Chicago, we're here for 2 weeks, which is great. And Chicago is sort of the end of our first chunk, so I got to kind of check out where we're going next.
Well, you, I know you've been here before in Spring Awakening, and
yes.
You're familiar with it, but certainly enjoy yourself, because we got some mild weather here, and
yeah,
at least you can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Canadian, so it's definitely...
It's warm for you, right?
It's nicer, yeah, absolutely.
Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce that the explosive Broadway hit American Idiot, called Wonderfully Raucous and Emotionally Charged by the New York Times, will play for 2 weeks only through February 19th at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph. On the line with us right now is one of the stars of American Idiot, Jake Epstein, of course, portrays Will. I'm going to give a phone number for the ticket office, Jake, 312-775-2000. Well, enjoy your time in Chicago here, my pal, and certainly thank you for sharing your talents with all of us on the stage, and hope everybody comes out and sees American Idiot.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you, Jake.
Okay, bye.
Jake Epstein, who portrays Will in American Idiot, of course, the music of Green Day, very, very popular, and certainly here in Chicago until February 19th. Well, as I mentioned, I want to kind of give us a little history of Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day started in the time of the Roman Empire in ancient Rome, February 14th, with a holiday to honor Juno. Juno was the queen of the Roman gods and goddesses. The Romans also knew her as the goddess of women and marriage. The lives of young boys and girls were strictly separate. However, one of the customs of the young people was name drawing. On the eve of the festival of Lupercalia, the names of Roman girls were written on slips of paper and placed into jars. Each young man would draw a girl's name from the jar and would then be partners for the duration of the festival with the girl whom he chose. Sometimes the pairing of the children lasted an entire year, and often they would fall in love and would later marry. Under the rule of Emperor Claudius II of Rome, was involved in many bloody and unpopular campaigns. Claudius the Cruel, he was known as, was having a difficult time getting soldiers to join his military leagues. He believed that the reason was that Roman men did not want to leave their loves or families. Well, as a result, Claudius canceled all marriages and engagements in Rome. The good Saint Valentine was a priest at Rome in the days of Claudius II. He aided the Christian martyrs and secretly married couples, and for this kind deed, St. Valentine was apprehended and dragged before the prefect of Rome, who condemned him to be beaten to death with clubs and to have his head cut off. No good, what's that, what did I say that? No good deed goes unpunished. He suffered martyrdom on the 14th day of February, 269 AD, the same day that had been devoted to love lotteries. Legend also says that St. Valentine left the farewell note for the jailer's daughter, who had become his friend, and signed it, "From your Valentine." Gradually, February 14th became the date for exchanging love messages, and St. Valentine became the patron saint of lovers. The date was marked by sending poems and simple gifts such as flowers. There was often a social gathering or a ball. Americans began to exchange handmade valentines in the early 1700s. The first mass-produced valentines in the United States were made around 1835 by a Mount Holyoke college student named Esther Howland. Her father, who owned a stationery store, imported valentines from England, but she wanted something more personal. She imported fancy paper and lace and employed assistants to help her in her enterprise. We currently celebrate Valentine's Day by honoring those we love with gifts, sentimental verses, and Valentine greeting cards. So that's the history of Valentine's Day. Didn't turn out so well for St. Valentine's, but ever since then, everybody's been enjoying it. The Joffrey Ballet presents three of the world's hottest choreographers in Winter Fire at the Auditorium Theater, February 15th through the 26th. The Joffrey Ballet brings to Chicago the work of three world-renowned choreographers in Winter Fire, a mixed repertory program featuring two premieres and an audience favorite. The groundbreaking pieces include the U.S. premiere of Infra, by Wayne McGregor, the resident choreographer of London's Royal Ballet, the company premiere of In the Middle, Somewhat Elevated, by William Forsythe, a former Joffrey dancer, and the critically acclaimed After the Rain by Christopher Wheeldon, resident choreographer of New York City Ballet. Winter Fire is presented in 10 performances only at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, February 15th through the 26th. Our winter program gathers the work of three contemporary choreographers who fundamentally transformed the direction of dance, says Joffrey Artistic Director Ashley Weeder. Each work is groundbreaking in its own way, reflecting the strong voice of the individual choreographer. This trio of works offers our dancers and our audience a great opportunity for artistic growth. Incredibly proud to share this program with the people of Chicago. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, world-renowned dancer having performed with the legendary Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn, teacher, mentor, member of the Royal Ballet, former ballet master of the San Francisco Ballet, visionary in the world of dance, and the artistic director of the world-renowned Joffrey Ballet, now presenting the Joffrey Ballet's winter engagement program, Winter Fire, February 15th through the 26th at the Auditorium Theater, our good friend, Mr. Ashley Witter. Ashley, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Very fine. Yourself, my
We're extremely busy, but it is truly been an inspiring 5 weeks of rehearsal.
Well, winter fire and kind of an oxymoron, but I'll tell you what, we're all on fire waiting for the winter engagement here.
Well, you know, I'm truly on I could probably talk about it forever, but I'm so extremely thankful to all three choreographers, William Forsythe, Christopher Wilden, and Wayne McGregor, who is here right now in person working with the company. I think that they have been so supportive of me and what I'm trying to do. And I really do think that it is an extraordinary program, and I think that each of the choreographers has contributed to making a huge statement in the dance and the ballet world.
Well, of course, you have three very talented people in the middle, somewhat elevated. I know you're very proud because our friend William Forsythe is a member, former member of the Joffrey Ballet.
He was. He was in the Joffrey Ballet in 71.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I joined the Joffrey Ballet as a dancer in 1984-85, I worked with Bill a lot. We did his love songs, which was with Aretha Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I went to San Francisco Ballet, I danced the lead in the middle, somewhat elevated, and we also did another work of his called New Sleep. So I've worked with Bill, and I have huge, huge admiration for him and for what he's done. I think the thing about this particular piece of work, In the Middle, Somewhat Elevated, is that it was commissioned when Rudolf Nureyev was the artistic director of Paris Opera Ballet.
Oh, really?
And that was in 1987. And it was so groundbreaking then, and it still is today. It is as forward-thinking today as it was back then. And so to be able to bring it to Chicago for our audiences and to give the company the experience of really understanding what William Forsythe is about, is very important for me, you know, that the company has great work that challenges them, not only physically, but also mentally, that they really have, you know, a cognitive awareness of the work that is being given to them.
Something near and dear to your heart, of course, a modern dance, but kind of grounded in a classical ballet foundation. In fact, in his own words, he says, ballet was my mother tongue and dance, so you can't erase it from your consciousness, and this is what this is the basis for.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about every piece on the program is that it uses classical ballet. Probably Wayne McGregor is probably the one who is furthest away from it,
mm-hmm.
and yet this piece was choreographed for the Royal Ballet. And we're the only company outside of the Royal Ballet at Covent Garden to have this particular work.
Huh.
So I'm just, you know, forever grateful to Wayne, because I think that a lot of people think, oh, contemporary dance, you know, it has no feeling. And I think actually the piece is, it's devastatingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it is emotionally, it affects you so deeply.
People say that modern dance has no feeling. They must be watching a different dance than I'm watching.
Yeah, me too. But that's what I hear is that,
they have to come to the Joffrey then. We got to get them to the Joffrey, seriously.
Well, you know, when I asked Wayne for Infra, it was really because I felt that it would be the kind of piece that the Joffrey, the dancers in the company, would really take a hold of it, and that they would challenge themselves, and they have worked so hard. I cannot tell you, Kevin, I'm so proud of the company.
Are the dancers, I know you're a great leader, of course, and people look up to you not only as the head of the Joffrey Ballet, but as a mentor, as a teacher, as someone to espouse to be like someday, but do they look at a person like McGregor or a person like Bill Forsythe or Christopher Wilden and want to do their best because they want to show those composers, those people who created these works, that they can show them what they can do on the stage?
Absolutely. It has meant so much for the company to have the opportunity to work one-on-one with Wayne McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're rare, and And I think in today's world where budgets are really short and we're always having to, you know, save a penny here, save a penny
there. Sure.
But I think that when if you really want to do an important piece of work, you have to say, this is important and we're going to give it the time and we're going to make it possible to bring in the creator. And I think that, you know, the company have really, really embraced Wayne. They love working with him. They just want to be everything that he wants them.
Is it difficult, Ashley, to have a fall engagement, the Nutcracker, which is a Christmas engagement, a winter engagement, and then also a spring engagement to do 5-week increments? Is it difficult to generate the enthusiasm for the dancers to put this all together?
No. I mean, you know, for the dancers, I mean, apart from, you know, our seasons here, the four seasons here, we also have a huge amount of touring. So
yeah, right.
The minute we close this winter program, we actually go straight on tour. And we have, I think it's about 10 or 12 cities.
Oh, boy.
So, and the repertoire is hard. So the thing is that, you know, a dancer, they will always work to the end of their ability,
mm-hmm.
and they are so incredibly excited. I mean, they were about Don Q, and they love doing the Nutcracker, and so this is just another facet, and a very important one, of the circle of what it is to be an artist and to be a dancer.
Of course, your good friend Christopher Wheeldon, After the Rain. I remember seeing After the Rain. It was in the fall engagement of 2010, was it not?
Yes.
And interesting piece, because it's kind of the emotional life of a relationship, the pushing, the pulling, the connectivity, the disconnectivity, shifting moods of a relationship.
Right. And the, what's interesting about the program, too, Kevin, is that I have on purpose put the program as in order of historical reference. So in the middle, somewhat elevated, and then Christopher Wheeldon did After the Rain, and then Wayne McGregor did Infra. And what's really fascinating about each of the pieces is they all end with just a pas de deux, which is two people on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the dynamic of each of those pas de deux is so radically different in structure, in emotion, and in space. So I think it'll be very, very interesting for the audience.
Of course, the theme of this season is new generation, and it seems that the ballets you have introduced here to us this year and the performers themselves almost feel like a new generation of performers and of composers.
Well, I think that, you know, that there are a lot of exceptionally talented young dancers in the company, and you know, it's my time with them, which is I spend a lot of time in the studio with them, because for me it's about we are one group of people that are working together for an art form that we all believe in. And I think that that's probably where I'm very different than a lot of directors. You know, I want to be with them, and I teach them, you know, all the time, and I understand the work, so I'm able to help them access it when they're struggling with a pas de deux or a variation or something. So, yeah, it is a new generation, and I think that the people that have come to see rehearsals have been so totally blown away by the work, but also by the dancing. And so, yeah, I'm very proud, and I think it's very important that, you know, a city like Chicago that has such integrity in its cultural arts, and there's a lot of great theater and forward-thinking ideas, and I think that that should apply also to the ballet and the dance world.
Well, yourself being an integral part of it, for sure. And I think it's interesting what you just said, because when you're working with these young people, I think they look up to you, Ashley, knowing full well that you have already experienced what they are experiencing or are going to experience. And I think that that's how I think that direction, that mentorship that you provide them works so very well.
I think it's really important. I mean, they, you know, I know how hard it is to achieve something, and do we ever really make it perfect? I doubt it. That's the desire for wanting to be a dancer. But I think that you can see when people are really doing their best and they need help, either in a technical way or emotional support, they have to be given it.
Well, I think if it was perfect, it wouldn't be human, and we're all human, so we watch it, and we expect excellence from the Joffrey Ballet, and, of course, Ashley Weider and the members of the Joffrey Ensemble always give us that.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Of course, we're looking forward to April 25th through the 6th, which is our Spring Desire engagement, which is going to be a lot of fun, and you know I want to have you back to chat about that.
Well, that would be great. And, you know, coming up in the spring, we have a world premiere on the program. And also, I'm sure that many people are aware, you know, it's a big celebration this year of Philip Glass and what his impact has been on music and minimal music. And what is exciting about this winter program is the fact that they're all living composers, Arvo Part, Thorm Williams, and Max Richter, who wrote the commission score for Infra.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the spring, we continue with a piece, Age of Innocence, that was commissioned by myself with Ed Liang. And he used Philip Glass's music and Thomas Newman.
Mm-hmm.
And then Val Canaparoli's world premiere uses the music of Alexander Rabinovich. And he is a living composer in the minimalist music. So it's really exciting. But Ed did a new piece for us.
Right.
He's extremely talented, and you know, he has worked with the company, and they respond so well to him. And I think that it is having that dialogue with a person that comes into the room to create that is so essential. I've always said that new work and new creative work is the lifeblood of a company, and I think that it's very true.
Classically trained to the highest standards, the Joffrey Ballet expresses unique, inclusive perspective on dance, proudly reflecting the diversity of America with its company and audiences and repertoire, which includes major story ballets, reconstructions of masterpieces, and contemporary works. Founded by the visionary teacher Robert Joffrey in 1956, guided by celebrated choreographer Gerald Arpino from 1988 until 2007, the Joffrey Ballet continues to thrive under internationally renowned artistic director Ashley Weider and executive director Christopher Clinton Conway. The Joffrey Ballet has become one of the most revered and recognizable arts organizations in America and one of the top dance companies in the world. The Joffrey Ballet presents three of the world's hottest choreographers in Winter Fire, featuring a U.S. premiere by Wayne McGregor, a company premiere by William Forsythe, and work by Christopher Wheeldon at the Auditorium Theater February 15th through the 26th. And online with us right now is our good pal, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet, Mr. Ashley Weider. Ashley, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
You can definitely go to joffrey.org, and you can access lots of things online. We also have our own box office at 10 East Randolph Street, which is our headquarters here in Chicago. And you can also get it through Ticketmaster and the Auditorium Theater. So I really encourage people. You know, I always say that a lot of people have an idea that ballet is of a certain mindset. And I think that with this program, it's showing that the language of ballet is so broad and it can be so incredibly exciting and contemporary that it's relevant for today's audience. It's relevant.
Well, certainly for me and for all our listeners and the people of Chicago, thank you for sharing those great talents with us, Ashley. I'm going to look forward to seeing you next week.
Good. I can't wait to see you, Kevin. It's always fantastic. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show. I really do appreciate it.
God bless you, my pal.
Okay, you too.
Thanks, Ashley.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mr. Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet, their winter engagement program, Winter Fire, February 15th through the 26th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, Congress at Michigan. For information, 800-982-2787. Windy City Circus, an all-new locally produced professional circus featuring jaw-dropping circus acts and hilarious characters from around the world, will make its debut inside Navy Pier Festival Hall, 600 East Grand Avenue, February 17th through the 26th. This exciting circus with a purpose will have a strong hometown feel featuring cameo appearances by an assortment of famous and infamous Chicago area historic figures. 80% of net ticket sale proceeds will go to benefit the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana and the Special Olympics Chicago and co-sponsor Special Children's Charities. Windy City Circus is proud to announce its new partnership with the City of Chicago to celebrate the city's 175th birthday. This will include a special salute during every performance of the circus throughout its 10-day run. And on the line with us right now is the big top producer and founder of Windy City Circus, renowned magician and star of many American and international circuses, juggler, tightrope walker, motorcyclist, ringmaster, co-star with his lovely wife, Danya, of the world-renowned David and Danya Quick Change show seen on Oprah, America's Got Talent, and the NBA halftime shows, now presenting the inaugural Chicagoland program of the Windy City Circus, February 17th through the 26th at Navy Pier, Mr. David Mast. David, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And, you know, as I said when we were talking a little earlier, everybody has seen what you've done with your lovely wife, Danya, where it's the quick change. And everybody, how do you do that? It's just amazing.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. We've had the fortune in the last few years of appearing on an awful lot of major television shows that have put us in front of a wide variety of audiences around the world, and particularly in Chicago, and we're so very, very proud to launch this wonderful program at Navy Pier coming up soon here.
Well, it's going to be very exciting, and it's funny because, you know, it's exciting because here in Chicago, we don't get a lot of circuses in the winter season, and this is something that people can look forward to. Come out to Navy Pier, which is a great venue, and just see something very unique that they haven't seen before.
It is indeed. I must say that this is the inaugural. As you can well imagine, in this economy, we have struggled somewhat to get the event scheduled, in time and at this location. And so we have undertaken something that's never ever been done before. So it's quite a struggle to get the word out with something that people don't know about. So I'm so very grateful to be on your program and let the people know about what's happening.
Well, it's an honor to have you, but I think more so by virtue of the fact that you have some people who are going to be in the circus that you don't always see around Chicago, like Marshall Field and Frank Lloyd Wright and even Mrs. O'Leary.
Yeah, we'll have weaving in and out of the program at various times some of the different characters that you just named that will be some of the strolling characters, and we hope to weave them in and out of parts of the program. So it will become somewhat educational for the children as well as entertaining for all ages.
Well, I think it's kind of speaks to you and Danya's, you know, unique personalities and certainly personalities in the entertainment, the field of entertainment, to be able to come up with ideas like this. And I said it's very unique, but, you know, most importantly, having been educated by the Jesuits myself, you're doing it for some great causes, the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana and the Special Olympics, just wonderful things.
Well, that's a great point. We wanted to create a program that was very, very, very different than such as Ringling or a Cirque du Soleil. We wanted a program that would give back to the community and was something that could eventually be under Big Top. That's very important to say that, by the way, because the program that we're doing at Navy Pier is basically a fundraiser and a prelude. It's a prelude to the Big Top. We want people to see an example of what it's about to be ultimately under Big Top, which is where it really belongs.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, we hope to be a program that can be in and around around the Chicagoland area, such as Big Apple has done in New York City.
Sure.
We are a not-for-profit organization dedicated to families and children. And so we are, in essence, a circus with a purpose. You know, the proceeds for this example, the lion's share anyway, are given to Special Olympics and Chicago and to Ronald McDonald House Charities. So we are a program that gives back to the community. I think that's important for the people. We are very, very affordable for the people to come out and see, you know, and we have all of the wonderful things that belong with an old-fashioned circus, such as the popcorn and the cotton candy and, you know, and the toys. And we have a special coloring book promotion for the children where they can come down and some of the characters can sign them. So there's a lot of interaction for the children as well. And so this is kind of a prelude to what they're about to see, we hope, on a regular basis if they can if we can be supported well enough in the Chicagoland area under Big Top.
Well, we'll certainly get the word out. And, of course, you have some great people over at Carol Fox & Associates, Jenny Topolowski and Nick Harkin, that do that so very well. And we owe it to ourselves, of course, and our families to come out, but it's a great way to do something that's going to help and benefit other people, too. It makes it puts a little different spin on it. It makes you want to come out, make more of an effort to come out, too.
We hope so.
Yeah.
We hope so. As I said, we are a circus with a purpose. That's the goal in mind. And I might add, the program that you're going to see, if you yourself get a chance to see, but the program that any individual gets a chance to see at Navy Pier is kind of a reduced program that would be under Big Top, as I told you. However, it's still an hour and 30 minutes long with absolutely world-class entertainers. Mm-hmm. We have chosen... We were hoping initially to have even some of the wonderful animals in the program, but some of the powers that may be, and you know, having our first time there kind of made it difficult for us to
sure.
to do that. But every individual that you will see in that program, as far as a star in that ring, are absolutely world-class performers, and I think the audience will be thrilled with what they get a chance to see.
And it's the kind of circus that we as children grew up with. Those are the circuses that we went to. You talk about the popcorn, the candy and so forth, the clowns and stuff like that. That's what we were familiar with, the Ringling Brothers Circus, and that's what this is going to be like. Like you say, on a smaller scale, but with the potential of growing to be that circus under the Big Top.
Absolutely, and remember, we are much more intimate than seeing a giant circus in a building, you know, sitting so far away. You know, almost every single person in this venue, as well as what you would see under Big Top, are within 50, 60 feet.
That's amazing.
Of the action.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But we did have the opportunity to go a little further in Navy Pier there, in that we have a little more room as opposed to a Big Top. And we have a thrilling family from Germany that are doing two particular acts called the Wheel of Destiny, which goes 55, 60 feet over your head. And also another act that they do where they're known as the Sky Masters, where there are two long, very slender, what we call sway poles that go right up in front of center ring. And they go up nearly 60 feet as well, and they literally exchange poles in midair, and they slide upside down at the end of the program. And it's just very, very thrilling. So... We've got, you know, we have comedy, we have juggling, we have acrobats, we have hand balancing, we have magic, we have a mix. And like I said, they will not be there all at the same time. We're going to kind of weave the characters mm-hmm. at different times and different shows so that anybody that is a repeat might get a chance to see a different character. But we are certainly hoping to have a pretty big cast of characters from the Chicagoland historical.
Well, being that close too, David, you're going to be almost feeling like you're part of that trapeze act when you're that close to the action.
Well, that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
It's very, very intimate. And so if people can kind of just get the picture of what it's going to be ultimately under Big Top, you know, it's kind of hard to tell you that and say, here, that's what it should look like. You know what I mean? But I think they'll get the idea. And ultimately, we are so very, very grateful to anybody listening right now that does get a chance to come to the show, that every dollar that they're spending out there will, you know, give this program a wonderful chance to stay alive and benefit these charities and right here in the Chicagoland area, which is so very, very important.
Well, God bless you and Danya for doing what you're doing. Windy City Circus brings world-class aerialists, jugglers, and illusionists, as well as an array of historic Chicago characters to Navy Pier February 17th through the 26th. Circus with a Purpose benefits the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana and the Special Olympics Chicago and co-sponsor Special Children's Charities. On the line with us right now is David Moss of the Big Top producer and founder of Windy City Circus. David, is there a phone number or website people can get some information from you?
You bet. I was about ready to tell you that. Everybody, please go to windycitycircus.org, and you will receive all of the information that you need as far as showtimes. And please check it out, because we just made some decisions today, as a matter of fact, to start some wonderful promotions for opening night and different shows. And if you check out all the shows, we're doing a total. We're scheduled right now. A couple of small things could change, but we're scheduled as of right now to do as many as 25 shows
wow.
throughout the 10 days. So that gives them a chance to see some early shows, you know, even an afternoon matinee, and, of course, a wonderful evening show. And you've got a wide variety in 10 days for anybody that has, you know, scheduling problems and things like that.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to it. All of Chicagoans looking forward to it. We'll keep getting the word out and look forward to seeing you in a week or so.
I appreciate it. Again, it's windycitycircus.org. I'm forever grateful for you putting us on the program and letting us tell people about the program. Navy Pier has been so very kind to offer I think, some great rates to get out there and park and get to the venue, and hopefully we're going to have a great show. And, again, thank you for having us.
Well, look forward to seeing you, and our best to Danya.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, David. David Maas from the Windy City Circus, February 17th through the 26th at Navy Pier. For information, 312-803-0096. Well, just a couple final thoughts on Valentine's Day. Married life is very frustrating. In the first year of marriage, the man speaks and the woman listens. In the second year, the woman speaks and the man listens. In the third year, they both speak and the neighbors listen. Another one, when a man opens the door of his car for his wife, you can be sure of one thing. Either the car is new or its wife is new. A couple came upon a wishing well. The wife leaned over and made a wish and threw in a penny. The husband decided to make a wish too, but he leaned over too much, fell into the well, and drowned. The wife was stunned for a moment, but then she smiled. It really works. Every man wants a wife who is beautiful, understanding, economical, and a good cook. But, unfortunately, the law only allows one wife. And finally, a man is incomplete until he's married. After that, he is finished. So a couple thoughts on Valentine's Day. You may or may not want to share with your wife. But anyway, well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially, I thank David Maas, very talented man, big top producer and founder of the Windy City Circus, the inaugural Chicagoland program of the Windy City Circus, February 17th through February 26th at Navy Pier. For information, 312-803-0096. You all remember them from the world-renowned David and Danya Quick Change Show. Very interesting, very interesting. Jake Epstein, who is in the hit musical American Idiot through February 19th at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph, the music of Green Day. For information, 312-775-2000. And, of course, our very good friend Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet, and his winter engagement program entitled Winter Fire, February 15th through the 26th at the Auditorium Theater Roosevelt University, Congress at Michigan. For information, 800-982-2787. Always a pleasure to chat with Ashley and have him on the show. What a very talented man. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Everybody have a happy Valentine's Day.
Why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music, the music.